Welcome to the My Practice Mentor Podcast.
Brought to you by Principa,
a global leader in helping accountants create real and lasting value for their clients, their team members, and themselves. Here's your host, Rick Payne.
I'm absolutely thrilled to introduce you today to Scott Charlton. I have known Scott for close to 20 years. He's a person who's played on both sides of the ball, as we like to say in North America, and by that I mean he was in public practice for close to 20 years in various size practices, from a sole practitioner through to a multi-partner firm. He then got involved in some consulting exercises and was one of the key authors of an accounting practice systemization tool, which is one of the most popular resources used in the Australian accounting profession. In more recent years, he's turned his skills and talents and interest to the area of financial planning, and not as a financial planner per se, but enabling accounting practices to interface with financial planning groups to benefit from the collaboration that comes from that association. So with that said, could you give us a brief overview of your business? But we want you to take a minute and tell us a little bit about you personally, because we want to get to know you, what you've done, and how you've got to get where you are at the moment.
Thanks, Rick. I think my background in terms of my chartered accounting career was fairly traditional. Brisbane, Australia, born and bred, started with one of the big four firms, big eight in those days, now big four, where I learned about auditing. I went to another one where I learned about accounting and tax. Very traditional route, get married, work overseas, which is in London for a little while, then back into a small firm with a fellow who was my manager at one of the firms before setting up on my own. Looking back on it, I was the classic technician from Michael Gerber's book, and I worked away for maybe the first five of those 10 years I had as a sole practitioner, doing it. The catalyst, and I'm happy to talk more about this, was going to your boot camp, Rick, and that sort of redefined how I looked at business and certainly set me on the path where I am on to today. I then had a very fruitful 4 years with two other guys in a CBD partnership. Before I had the sense that sort of I'd gone as far as I wanted to or I could in public accounting, that there are other things that were sort of burning within me. So from there, I've had a 12-year career, and I call myself a business coach. These days, I feel like I straddle accounting and financial planning almost interchangeably. It's my vision to sort of actually have the two professions working much more productively together. So that brings me to where I am today, where I'm actively working with both professions in this overall business that I'm part of, which is a financial planning group first and foremost, but a particular arm of that I'm setting up as we speak, is going to be dedicated to this aspect of accountants and planners working together. So that's the thumbnail sketch, if you like.
Okay, thank you, Scott. Well, we'll dig much deeper into that business and the insights that you've got from that insofar as they affect the accounting profession later on in the interview. But just to get the ball rolling, I like to start these interviews with my guest to share with us a motivational quote or a mantra, something that he or she find inspirational or have helped them guide or find their way. What's yours?
Well, Rick, I have two. One that I apply personally, which is simply onwards and upwards. I'm an optimist by nature, and no matter what's actually happened, it's always a matter of picking yourself up and going on. The team members that I work with would probably apply that another way and say, look, is the guy never satisfied? Or answer, probably not. And the second one, which I sort of took a lot of inspiration from as I toiled part-time through my MBA while sort of holding down a number of responsibilities. And so that was a lot of late nights and sort of woe is me type of sensations. And I had this little quote from a lady called Elisa Camplin. Now, she won a gold medal in aerial skiing for Australia and some Olympics way back when. And sort of, there was a paragraph there, but the particular phrase was, unless the bone is sticking out of my leg, I'm not injured. And I just sort of find that just was a breakthrough wake-up call and go like, hey, it's not so bad. Just get back to work.
I absolutely love that, Scott, and I can relate to it personally in that I am a fanatical skier, which is one of the reasons I live at Lake Tahoe. And as a matter of fact, this morning before I did this interview, I spent four hours on the hill. And
Lovely.
Yeah, and I try to do that pretty well every day during winter. It's my form of recreation, but there's always the possibility that you might have a bone sticking out of your shoulder, and I've torn a rotator cuff and broken an arm in the process. My kids have actually said to me, Dad, just why don't you grow up and act your age?
Well, the other mantra there is that also keeps me on the straight and narrow is, there's no fool like an old fool.
Well, isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? But at least we're wise. As you know, most of our listeners are accountants, and we do have some business advisors and so on, and they're in the market to try and help small business owners have a better life through having a better business. That's kind of our byline. What advice could you give to people, particularly in relation to this collaboration idea, that would enable a typical accounting practice, for example, to be able to go to a client, a properly selected client, and create some real value for those people so that they would see them, their accountant, as being someone that they rely on to help them have a better life, both now and in the future?
The realization I've come to is that if you want a better business or you want a better business for your clients, then first and foremost, you've got to become a better business person. And I think that goes to the heart of it, that yes, your technical knowledge is really important, but more than that, you've actually got to be thinking in terms of the bigger picture, that your clients are sort of seeking a broader set of outcomes from their engagement with you. And you need to be able to engage with them in a meaningful discussion across a broader range of things. So in terms of never being satisfied, it means that every business that you come across, that you need to be observing what they do well, what you could sort of take out from a completely different business and apply in your own, what they don't do well, and sort of how you can make sure that doesn't happen in your business. So whether you're applying it to your own business, or particularly sort of helping your clients get to where they're going, then I think that's what you've got to do. No business really wants an accountant or financial planner per se. They want to get their objectives met, and they'll sort of really relate more to somebody who's orientated that way and can look at it from a bigger perspective than just a technical sort of engagement, I think.
And do you think, in your opinion, based on what you've seen, both in the trenches yourself, but more importantly, perhaps from the perspective of an advisor to the profession, that accountants are actually taking advantage of this opportunity, that their clients could benefit so much more from them if they would only get out and take a bigger holistic view of their business and their life and not worry so much about how long is it going to take me to get this job done so that I can get a bill done and move on to the next client?
Look, that is absolutely the case. And I guess having sort of been out of the what I used to call the washing machine, because that's what it felt like being in it, for long enough, sort of sometimes in the facilitation work that I do, because I spend a lot of time with accountants and planners in the same room, looking at how collaboration can work for all parties. Sometimes you just feel like shaking an account and say, look, just let go of sort of like your the way that you've been looking at these things and look at the bigger picture. You've got so much more that you can do, but you're sort of like you're anchored in your thinking by exactly what you've just described.
Why do you think accountants are so reluctant to embrace this idea of taking a more holistic view and putting some time and effort into understanding their client and where their client is coming from?
I think there is a culture of busyness that comes from today's deadlines or tomorrow's imperative that accountants take their responsibilities of meeting sort of those short-term expectations very seriously, and they should. But it can actually be a bit unhealthy in that it takes over everyone's thinking, so that if all you're ever thinking about is stuff that which is short-term, then you're not actually standing back and looking at what else can be done. That's, I think, what accountants can do is re-engineer how they spend their time such that there is sort of an allocation to thinking about client situations in talking to the clients and really tapping into what they want to achieve, and then having some resources to actually sort of explore those areas further. And I think that unless and until you can sort of just move away from a diary that's absolutely just chock full of appointments from week to week, that you're just going to find it very hard to sort of step out of the environment you're in and into something that will be more conducive to giving real value to clients.
Scott, you mentioned resources there. When you first talk to an accountant, let's say, about interfacing with an introduced financial planning planner, let's say. Yeah. What process do you go through to help the accountant see this message? And the reason I'm asking that question is that although accountants tell me they're always wanting more clients, I know from the work that I've done with them that they don't have capacity for more clients. And what inevitably happens is they'll bring on board a new client. They'll be all over that client because he or she are new. And meanwhile, work is going to be falling off the back of the tray for their existing clients. And as you say, this busyness thing. And yet we know that if they reduce the size of their client base by an order of magnitude, and then looked at ways in which they could create value for that smaller number of clients, then they'd be able to introduce financial planning and all of these other things. My question, I suppose, to you is, what success have you had in helping accounting practices see this issue?
I think it's really important to sort of help clients, accountants achieve some breakthrough thinking. And I totally endorse what you say, by the way, and perhaps we can come back to sort of some aspects of that in a moment. But I'd like to perhaps sort of share with you a concept that I've been working with over the past 12 months that I have found really helpful. And it comes from a concept I stole from the newspapers. You might have it in your country, Rick, where an incoming new government, after 100 days, the newspaper sort of says, okay, well, look, let's all give the ministers, the prime minister, a report. What out of 10 will we give the prime minister for his or her performance? And just sort of take a moment to assess. And I thought, well, look, I actually like the idea of 100 days. And if you apply it to an accounting firm, it's a good period of time because it's time enough for you to have a problem with your tax lodgements or your file server has melted down. You can have a holiday. You can have staff members come and go, but you can still actually get some stuff done. So the challenge I actually provide to accountants and planners, this is, works best when they're in the same room, is to say, look, imagine for a moment that your marketing has actually worked. Just let that pause and sink in, that what we actually have is a client meeting. Your absolute target client characteristics, and that this person has said, okay, what can you do for me? So it's not a client existing for the accountant, nor is it a client existing for the planner. So look, we don't have any territorial sort of issues and, oh, no, they wouldn't like that. There's no prejudging or no thoughts of let's just get the tax done and then worry about it later. So I say, okay, look, this is a client that's just absolute sort of like blank bit of paper. So the challenge is, how might we collectively and using our individual talents significantly advance the affairs of this client in the first 100 days of our appointment? And so once you actually sort of like consider this, it's actually a really invigorating concept because the brakes come off, the blinkers are off, and people start to sort of like say, well, look, we could do this, we could do that. The conversation actually sort of like happily sort of interplays between what the accountant sort of says, look, these are the things that I would do. And if it's a business client, then accountants will sort of dive into areas. So like we'd need to tidy up their reporting system. We'd want some KPIs. We'd want to meet with them regularly. We'd be looking to sort of do some forward projections. And the planner can actually sort of understand all of that. And the planner would say, look, we'd need to have a look at people's wills and sort of like what they're looking to sort of achieve in retirement, what their lifestyle will be like. So what we actually have is a timeline whereby the two professions are working sort of like side by side sort of on different aspects of the client's affairs, but at different points they actually sort of are interrelating and bringing the client in. So once you actually sort of like, you know, map that out for that particular target client, you can say, well, look, this is a really exhilarating, invigorating way that we can actually sort of look at a client's situation. And that I have found sort of particularly helpful in actually sort of getting, you mentioned accountants, sort of get them thinking, well, there's more that we could and should be doing. So if accountants are willing to embrace this, then that gives far more reason why they might sort of take some steps in their own business to enable them to do more of that type of work.
That's interesting, Scott, because what you're talking about there is a form of methodology to get people to entertain a change within their practice and the way they practice. The reason I say that it's interesting is that in the last few years, I personally have become pretty convinced that, well, let me just back up a little bit. When I started off on this journey, and this journey for me started around the 80s, it was in the 90s that I got together with Paul and we started the boot camp, and that's when I became kind of full-time practice development consultant, if you will. But back in those days, I was very much a methods person. And by that I mean, I thought, if I can share with people some tools and technologies and approaches that I used that had been successful for me in varying forms, if they were to embrace those ideas, they would get the same sort of results. And a relatively small proportion of practitioners who took on board those things, as you would know, did get those results. Predictably, yes, they did get those results. But there were a much larger percentage of practitioners who heard exactly the same story, who deal with exactly the same clients, had all of the same tools and resources and so on, and did not get the same result. So I started thinking, what makes the difference? And the difference is they think differently. Now, your 100 days thing, I think, is brilliantly clever because it creates that circumstance. And the reason I've gone on about this a little bit is that what is interesting, it's like the work that Dan Pink has done in selling and in motivation and so on, the neuroscience, the science of the way the brain works is totally consistent with what you're talking about. Now, 10 or 20 years ago, the science was not there. It was rooted in, you know, Napoleon Hill's kind of stuff, which interestingly, the science today is now proving was right. That is fascinating. So I think that's amazing, Scott. I really like that. I think that's a great tool. I think if people just went away from this interview and said, let's think about a 100-day program of change. Let's think about just working with some clients. Let's collaborate with a financial planning group. Let's collaborate with a business advisor. What would we have to do in order to create some value for clients and forget about all of the other things that are around them? I love that tool.
Yeah, you need a big whiteboard because the ideas can usually start flowing.
Well, that's the other thing. Once you get a different once you paint a different canvas, that's when all of the ideas start to flow.
Correct.
And you know, again, it comes back to this hardwiring of the brain and the way these things are firing, literally. So, Scott, one of the things that, I mean, you're around the trenches certainly as much as me, perhaps more than me. What do you see as one of the most serious threats facing businesses today? Not just accounting practices, but SMEs. And in that context, what may accounting practices do to help those businesses?
I think that we are increasingly becoming a very commoditized society where you've got very savvy and informed consumers who are less loyal and are sort of more driven by sort of like a click on a screen. So I think there'll be a lot less inclination to loyalty if people are able to package you and put you in the product provider category. So certainly with accountants, I think if it's just a tax return that you're providing, there'll always be somebody who will provide it cheaper. There's just got to be more strings to your bow than just doing that. The client has got to sort of see you as in a different category to just being the product provider. So if you're doing the 100-day program with the client, you're in a different space. But if it's just a tax return, it's a sort of essentially the same task as last year, then, you know, sort of clients are going to be more inclined to look at other solutions. So I think that carries on to the businesses that accountants are advising as well. It's sort of have a robust value proposition that is more than just sort of perhaps what the clients asked for. It's to sort of open up a whole new world of possibilities to that client.
So how would you advise an accounting practice to build that, right? Because essentially what you're talking about, isn't it, that if you cannot differentiate your product, you must differentiate the process by which it is delivered. Is that a fair summary?
Look, there's a lot that you can do in terms of improving your process of delivering. I mean, I'm not sort of saying that you need to have the most expensive tax returns and defend that position by value adding. I think you've sort of actually got to sort of like be as efficient as you can. But it's more what else that you can be doing for a client, and that clients come to you preferably with an expectation that you're going to do more for them. But irrespective, even if it's a client that you work with for a while, to open up the client's mind that you can and should be doing more together. I think that's critical, and to give names to things. So if a new client comes in to you, of course you're going to look at their past tax returns. You're going to look at their structure, and you'll sort of mentally be making notes of what opportunities and vulnerabilities there are from, let's say, even a tax point of view. But why not actually sort of like present that in a way that the client will see value? So present a tax opportunities report or whatever title you want to give to it, and actually provide a little report specifically on that aspect, so that you're actually sort of making visible something that you're doing instinctively anyway, and providing the client with a much more specific idea in terms of where you add value. So I think to be better at articulating what it is that you're doing would be a very big step in the right direction.
So it is about this relationship, isn't it? Establishing a relationship of trust, of empathy, of mutual respect.
Yes.
So, Scott, my guess is that you've probably come across a number of accounting practices that have successfully navigated this collaborative sort of model of working with financial planners and so on. Can you share with us what distinguishes them from those that may have struggled in that process?
Yes, I think there's a number of elements, Rick. Firstly, there has to be sort of like this really sort of crazy, brave, sort of light on the hill champion person who says, look, this is how we are going to be defined, that's sort of like we are going to embrace a collaborative world. We are going to sort of not look so much at what an accountant does, but we're going to look at it in terms of how we might help our clients, and we're going to do this in a collaborative way. And that person, whether it's the founder, the managing partner, or a senior respected figure, is just that zealot who's going to sort of carry all before him or her. I think that's important. Depending upon the size of your firm, I also think that you need an implementer, somebody who's going to translate the broad image of what the visionary has portrayed and bring that down to specifics. I had the pleasure of interviewing a fellow in just such a role in a regional firm in North Queensland recently, and he volunteered. This is a multidisciplinary firm, and I'm a multidisciplinary guy, and it's just sort of like the way that he was looking at it. Interestingly, he's neither accountant nor is he a planner, but he's a sort of an implementer, and his role is to actually sort of like reduce the traditional silos so that we've got a single database, that we've got sort of one person who's chasing up outstanding information, be it sort of on accounting or financial planning. There's a common terminology. There are common systems to track the progress of assignments throughout the firm. So I think the implementer is also pretty important. And I think the way that you actually sort of bring your team along is pretty important. One of the neat things is that new team members, they don't know any different. These are the rules of the game, you tell them. We are into sort of providing services across the board and to help our clients. And sort of like if you're not prepared to play that game, then, well, you're not the firm for us. So that's sort of like right from the outset, that's the expectation, and that sort of you don't even need to sort of talk about sort of referrals. You can talk about introductions, sort of change the rules of the game so that sort of everyone is actually more focused on the client than sort of like their specific parts of the puzzle.
So, Scott, in relation to firm profitability and client retention, client loyalty and client growth through organic means as opposed to just acquisitions, do you see those firms that understand that idea as performing at a much higher level than the average firm?
When they have emerged from the work in progress stage, yes. But sort of like if you sort of start sort of changing things, then there will be some ups and downs as you sort of change the way the factory is wired.
How long does that take?
Yeah. That I think that depends on a number of factors. The larger the firm, the more moving parts there are. And even if you have a sort of like a terrific implementer person, then it will take a bit longer. Smaller firms can actually move much more quickly. I found when I was in sole practice, right or wrong, if I had a sort of a great idea in the shower of a morning, then by morning tea time, the better off or worse, it was implemented. So you can move through it more quickly.
What is interesting is, and many people can relate to this, and I think it's consistent with what I was saying before, great ideas often happen in the shower because, you know, you're not focused on anything else. Your mind is sort of moving around. And it, once again, this is what the neuroscience is actually finding. So, Scott, as we head towards the end of the time we have together today, reluctantly, I just want to ask you a couple of really quick questions on some things and get your insights into them. My first question is, what is really exciting you right now? What's something that you're doing or involved with that's really exciting for you personally or for your business right now?
Rick, I have completed writing the third book in my trilogy. It's called Partnering with Accountants, and it's designed to explain everything that a financial planner or finance broker or general insurer need to know about working with accountants. It's the culmination of 20 years of observation and reflection. It's going to be great, and I'm sure it will make a big, big difference to many, many professionals. So hopefully we'll have that out early next year.
Is that going to be in ebook form, or is it going to be a a printed form?
All of the above, yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll put that in the show notes so that people who want to go down that route would be able to get access to it. Scott, here's a question that we all get asked. What is the best advice you have ever received in your life from anybody?
Rick, I think the thing that really helped me was, and I think we've probably all done sort of various psychological profiles. I did one. It's called the ID profile, and you know there are others around. This one really resonated with me. In a sort of like a short space of time, a few brief pages, it sort of said, look, this is how you are, and I immediately felt validated that it was okay to be who I am, and it gave me some sort of very helpful insights in terms of how I can get the best out of myself. And even to sort of like understand that surprisingly not everyone is wired the same way, and the relationships I've had with other people sort of on the home front and the work environment are so much better by understanding the difference between my wiring and theirs. So I've found it invaluable.
Is that something that you had to have somebody else administer and interpret, or is it something that someone could go online and get access to and give some thought to?
Substantially, you can just go online, fill out a questionnaire, and it spits out a report. If you want to sort of go into it more deeply, you can get sort of somebody to consult with you or read the book. But most people pick up a fair bit in just reading the report, so it's all pretty painless.
Well, we'll put that in the show notes so that anybody who might be interested in going down that route can do so. Scott, what's something that's working really well for you or for your clients right now?
Rick, I mentioned before sort of I'm looking to sort of like bring a new business arm into being, and I've taken a leaf from my own book, and the coach is being coached. I'm developing I'm participating in a program. It's called the Key Person of Influence, and it's a 40-week program that it's quite intense. It covers a number of aspects about building a business that I'm really enjoying sort of being the client, not the coach, for a change, and it's just really been quite useful to have a business that I can apply all this learning to. I've found that quite energizing.
Is that, again, is that some face-to-face thing, or can you do it online? Do you do it in your own time? Is it a self-study process?
All of the above, actually. There's workshops, webinars, and a lot of offline work. One thing that I've found really good as part of this program, which you can apply anywhere, is the buddy system. Nothing new in that, but touching base with your buddy daily and saying, "Look, what are you doing today?" And I think that's been terrific. I've enjoyed that a lot and found it helpful.
So, Scott, another question. Is there an internet tool or a resource that you feel right now you could not live without? I call it a resource du jour.
Absolutely. LinkedIn. I've been using it for quite a number of years. I just find it invaluable. I mean, it's how we've reconnected after a gap, and I'm happy about that. It's how I connect with potential new clients, how I research them before I go to see them. It's something I learned from you way back when, is to do your preparation. I find it indispensable in terms of building up a contacts database. And even after you've met somebody, you exchange business cards, it's a nice way to follow up and say, look, enjoyed meeting you with you, and why don't we link in? I find it invaluable.
If you were to recommend just one book to our listeners, and bear in mind that they're accountants in public practice and some business advisors, what would that book be and why would you recommend it?
I've given this question a lot of thought because you were sort of considerate enough to give me a bit of notice, and it's a nice question to reflect on. It's not a business book. It's one about more the meaning of life. So the book is called Tuesdays with Morrie. The subtitle is An Old Man, a Young Man, and Life's Greatest Lesson. I found it invaluable.
Perfect. It's a great book. I actually have that and I have read it. What I want to ask now is a kind of a complex question, so I want you to think about it a little bit. And as you say, I did tell you I would ask this question, but if you woke up one day from, let's say, a coma, but let's just say you woke up one day and you had nothing except $1,000, you had all of your accommodations and food and so on was taken care of, and you had all of your knowledge and wisdom that you had gained up to this point of time in your life, and you were starting an accounting practice, because that's what our listeners are predominantly from, what would you do?
Look, it's a good question. I do relate to that because, as it turned out, I found myself unexpectedly out in the street just as the GFC hit. So I can actually sort of apply sort of some of what I learned out of it. Look, to me, you've got to start with the whole vision thing, and the really exciting thing is that if you've got that blank bit of paper, you can sort of build it from the ground up in terms of what you're going to do. And so many people, when the coaching that I undertake, they sort of say, oh, look, I wish I could sort of like just free myself from all of this and start again. I'm not sure that you really would want to do that. I think it's easier to change direction and start afresh. But so I think a very clear vision in terms of what you're about. For me personally, I think that the next thing I would look at is building a database. There's such a huge difference that if it's sort of like you're out there in the street with sort of no one versus you've got a database of 500, 1,000, 1,200 people that you've known, you've interacted with, that think highly of you. You can ring them up and ask them for their opinion or ask them for referrals or ask them for their time, I would build that database. And as we mentioned before, LinkedIn is an excellent way of getting started. I think the other thing is that it's your store of intellectual capital which is critical. So we all sort of like go around sort of thinking that what we do is ordinary, or everyone sort of like knows that, but that's not the case. We've all had these experiences with clients. We've all developed ways of working with people. We've all got sets of tools that we use. So I'd be looking to sort of recreate the best of what I've done previously, of what I know, so that I've got great systems to follow. I've got sort of intellectual capital that is represented by sort of even just a strategy paper or three. such that sort of when I'm sitting across the desk from a prospective referrer or from a sort of like a potential client, I've got something to engage with them in. So I do all of that, and I haven't spent a cent of my $1,000. I think that's what I'd do. In terms of using my $1,000, I'd view that as a marketing budget. So by carefully managing the pennies, I think I'd make an investment in some professional photography, and that I do need a bit of work. I think sort of a well put together business card and just the initial beginnings of a website will all help to present me such that when I'm going to see somebody, and I know that sort of if somebody is interested in seeing me, they'll Google me. I want to pop up. I'll pop up on LinkedIn. I'll have some interesting things in my website, which again will hopefully sort of bring me up in the Google list. Such that sort of I can set a good expectation and leave a great first impression of people I talk to. So they would be how I would spend my early days. But as I say, it all starts with a vision thing, saying, look, let's actually take this as a wonderful opportunity to start afresh and do it as it should be done.
Essentially, what you're saying really is just tap into your network, draw on the wisdom and knowledge and experience that you've gained in the past, and just move forward from looking at something a little bit different that's been successful. And
yeah, the answers are largely within you to sort of build a new future based on what you've done. So it's the opportunity to reinvent and reinvigorate. So it's a thank you, Coma. It's a good opportunity.
Scott, it really has been amazing to talk to you, and it's certainly something that I suppose living over here, I don't get to see some of my old friends as often as I did before, and that makes it even more special. So I do want to thank you for being so generous and willing to share your experience and your insights and so on with us. Let's finish this conversation with you just giving our listeners one piece of parting advice and let them know how they can contact you.
Sure. It's not so much an advice as a question, and it's how high is high, and by that I mean sort of like what are your limits, be it on the, well, you probably know them on the ski field, but in life and in business, like where can you get to? It's more or less a philosophy of what. Why not me? Why not now? So if you're doing something that you really enjoy, then you'll find ways to do extraordinary things. Now, I'm not beating my chest, but people say, look, how did you find the time to write three books while you're holding down a busy job and family commitments, etc.? And sometimes I sort of say, look, I honestly don't know, but it's sort of something that I wanted to do. I felt that it was right for me. And so I've become an author. I hadn't set out to be that way, but that's what happened. So find the things that you really enjoy and challenge yourself to push that as far as you can.
And Scott, how can people contact you?
Yes, well, look, I'm available on LinkedIn, as you would expect. I have a personal website, www.scottcharlton.com.au. Or the email scott@scottcharlton.com.au will get directly to me.
Well, Scott, thank you again very much. I really appreciate it. It's been lovely talking with you, and I hope that we can do this again one day.
I really look forward to that, Rick. It's been a pleasure.
Principa provides accountants and business advisors with systems, tools, training and support. Visit principa.net. Better business, better life.